You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 4th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Wayne McCurry, Will Buffer King, Marion Roberts, Keith McLachlan on Levi Strauss for his offshore portfolio, and Craig Antonio from Enbro Capital. What's been his standout tech earnings so far in this earnings season? We asked Gary that yesterday, and his was AMD, the chip manufacturer. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb at 91. It gives media observer status at Wednesday's AGM. This is how it should be. You should be able to, sure, you can't ask questions perhaps. You're not a shareholder, but observer status. I like that idea. And Fin24, bumper profit spreads, smiles at Will Buffer King. But stock price doesn't like it at all. That stock was actually down quite a chunk on the back of their results. We'll dig into that with Wayne. Morning markets, we've got the US green, S&P up 0.8 and NASDAQ is 0.7%. Asia's mixed as Sydney trades up 0.33% higher and Tokyo 0.1% down. Commodities, green overnight, gold, $1,817 an ounce. Rand, actually quite a bit stronger, 14.29 against the dollar. Top 40 opening call, green open, looking about 570 points. That's 0.9% as Tencent trades up 4.9%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned in the intro there, Royal Buffer King Platinum, a really, really good set of numbers, but the market didn't seem to like it. Perhaps stingy dividend, worries about the forecast being revised downwards, but certainly not the response we got last week from the likes of Kumba Anglo and Anglo Platinum.
No, they're very different. I mean, now look, I mean, the market's pricing in, specifically in the platinum shares, market's pricing in a lot of good news, eh? Mm-hmm. You know, and if there's a slight disappointment, the shares can come off quite significantly. But, I mean, when you're talking about the earnings, I mean, could life be better for a platinum company?
Yeah.
I mean, you're making 70% margin.
Yeah.
You know, you were almost bankrupt 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Now you're making such a massive margin. I mean, these have to be peak earnings.
Peak earnings, and that's just it. The market, you know, looking at Royal Buffer King, the stock is up, what, 6, 7, 8 fold since the lows of last year. I take your point. It needs to be perfect earnings. Any little, you know, little stinge in the dividend, little miss in production.
Correct.
They're going to be punished.
Yes. Which is, I mean, what were the shares down? Last time I looked, it was about 5%.
Yeah, it ended up being almost 8% down on the day.
8%, okay.
Yeah. So it did take a fair pounding. We also saw Marion Roberts came out yesterday. Another contract, it's $1.2 billion. They keep on announcing these contracts that are going into the order book. Are we missing a trick there? I mean, the stock is stuck around the 10 Rand. They're no longer the, you know, sort of civil construction company that they were many years ago.
Not at all. Look, I think you might be quite right. You might be missing something here because they are certainly getting in some quite chunky contracts there.
Yeah, and in mining, in oil and gas, and they've also got some of that infrastructure still in place, which could potentially benefit them. We've seen trade balance data coming through year to date running at almost a quarter of a trillion. Astonishing. I mean, that was exactly going to be my word. I mean, this is mass. It's thanks to the commodity miners, but as an economy, I mean, we will take it. It's giving us tax revenues. It's helping the rand.
I mean, we're getting almost a quarter of a trillion, as you said, versus last year's 50 million surplus. I mean, exports are up 50% and volumes aren't bad, you know, so. You know, last time we had a big commodity boom, the infrastructure couldn't handle it, and we actually didn't participate in the commodity boom to the same extent as what we should have. Whereas this time around, we are actually getting the volumes out. You know, despite Eskom and despite Transnet and everything, the volume, it's not just the pricing issue. Mm-hmm. The volumes aren't bad either. But, you know, very similar to as we were discussing with the platinum shares, this is probably as good as what it gets for South Africa in respect of commodity prices and trade balance, eh?
Yeah. So
it doesn't get much better than this.
It doesn't. And the key point is those commodity prices need to hold. They don't need to go higher, but they need to stay where they are, both for the miners and for the broader SA economy.
But, I mean, they are at very, very high levels. Look, the downside for commodity prices is far less than what it has been in previous cycles because there is no new supply tsunami coming going to hit you. So I think there's downside. It's significantly less than what in previous cycles, as I've said. But commodities are still cyclical. I mean, iron ore, the average production cost of iron ore is probably $30, if that, worldwide. And it's trading at $200.
Yeah. Yeah, enjoy it while you can. That can't hold forever. Yes. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan. He is Investment Officer at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Talking your offshore portfolio here rather than the local one. And a stock that you've been putting into that portfolio, Levi Strauss. I mean, lots of angles on it. The first part, I suppose, is frankly, it's that less formal wear. It's not just that we've been stuck at home. It's that probably we're going to be wearing more jeans going forward. And a really astounding stat that you've found, a third of Americans have changed a waist size during the pandemic.
Absolutely. And good morning, Simon, and to your listeners. A third of America has changed the waist size, which either up or down, so let's not discriminate.
Sure, sure.
But what that does is it creates a wardrobe opportunity. But just shifting to the casualization of the workplace and arguably the world in many senses, this actually goes back even further. If you remember many, many, many years ago, me and you used to wear suits and ties to work.
Yeah.
And then ties became optional. So it was just suits. And then slowly casual Fridays crept in. And now we have smart casual in the casualization of the workplaces. And in fact, what's happened with the pandemic is it's accelerated that because all one even has to do is look smart from the waist up on a Zoom meeting. So and what's really driving us? Well, generations are changing. So there's millennials entering the workforce that prioritize work-life balances. And a key element of that is really the casualization of work attire. Now, something like sweatpants are still frowned on wearing them to work. And this is a very nice niche played by jeans in terms of smart casual. But it's even broader than that. And in Levi's sense, that's only one element of a multi-pronged tailwind that's potentially driving their growth for many years to come.
Yeah, I mean, Levi Strauss, I mean, it's not like they've been, you know, bankrupt or anything. They are a strong global brand. They've been growing the business. They are well positioned. In a sense, I mean, you almost make the case that, you know, they almost could be the next Nike. I mean, in terms of going omni-channel, in terms of starting to dominate a brand. I remember the whole idea that you know, Lululemon could come on and take on Nike. They have a bit, but they were in the same category. This could be the casual wear Nike equivalent.
Yes, Simon, and you stole a lot of my thunder there, but Levi's is really using the model perfected by Nike in the athleisure space. They're using it in the casual wear space. And let me throw some stats out there because at the core, Levi's model is to grow the number of products, grow the geographies, and grow the channels, particularly direct to consumer, which is higher margin than wholesale and includes a strong e-commerce element. But I'll throw some stats out there. First of all, only a third of their products are sold to women. So if you can increase the female products, one increases the revenue. For the world's number one denim brand, which understand companies spend billions to get their brands recognized globally. Levi's don't need to do that. They're already recognized globally. But over half of their revenues is generated in America. So there's an entire global market just waiting for them to grow into it. At the same time, in terms of growing their channels, and growing their geographies, they have the ability to grow their product range with their brand. What I mean by that is over three quarters of their products are still bottoms, i.e. jeans. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason one can't grow tops. One can't grow into different and related categories. And all of these at a 55% GP margin that's steadily rising as they grow the direct to consumer. And what one gets is one gets a very attractive pipeline of growth that is pretty low risk, in my opinion, particularly as this casual wear trend, the casualization of the world and workplace happens, and off the back of the fact that they, as I said, number one denim brand in the world, and they using an ungeared balance sheet to grow all of this on top of that. So it's very attractive. Perhaps the final thing to touch on is Nike's done this in the athleisure space, absolutely superb, mind-blowing company. It's sitting on a 40 times multiple.
Yeah.
Forward multiple. Mm-hmm. Levi's is sitting on a 20 times forward multiple and is 11 times smaller than Nike. I would argue more, so it's not just cheaper and they're playing in a different space, but I would argue more people on planet Earth wear jeans than go for jogs in their spare time. So I think this is an even larger addressable market, perhaps, than the one that Nike's going for.
Yeah, and the man sitting here in jeans, he hasn't jogged in my life. But I take your point. I mean, Nike used to just be shoes. And now Nike's all those other components as well, shirts and bottoms and everything else. And that's the opportunity for Levi. And even if they only get it half right, and they can push those volumes, and they can get those margins even further and take what is a decent valuation and perhaps stretch it and give you two levers of upside.
Absolutely. This is not a demanding valuation at all. And over a period in time where they've had a large number of their stores closed, don't forget, on the back of all of this, they've been forced to accelerate their digitization and e-commerce strategies, which is actually a good thing. Because in the long term, those are the channels where you're growing your brand direct to consumer. And as you're growing your brand direct to consumer, it's giving you the ability to interact with the consumer and to grow the number of products that you offer them. And they've got a pipeline from shoes to tops. And don't forget, in parallel, because the majority at this point are bottoms sold in America to men. So we're talking male jeans in America, basically. The opportunity is, even if you just get the female categories right, well, you can double the size of the business. Yep. And then layer on the top of it multiple different products and multiple different geographies. And what you really have is at a 55 times gross profit margin on an ungeared balance sheet, you just have a huge amount of bottom line coming down over probably the next 5 to 10 years.
It's Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer, Integral Asset Management. Levi Strauss, the next Nike. We'll see in time, but this certainly is a compelling story.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Craig and Tony, CIO at Enbro Capital, where they've got the Unicorn Fund, which is a chock full of tech stocks. And Craig, that's what I want to chat this morning. Appreciate the early morning time. We've seen US earnings coming through. Earnings season's not over, but much of it done. It has been a knockout earnings season. In your space of stocks that you watch and monitor, have in your fund, perhaps on a watch list, what's been an absolute standout result for you? That just was better than expected.
Hi there, Simon. Well, morning, everyone, and morning to all the users. Thanks for having me. I think, you know, when one looks at the results, you know, in the space that we cover, it's going to be a very interesting time because, you know, most of the companies that we're invested in were very big beneficiaries of COVID, if you like.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, the numbers that we're busy comparing ourselves to this time around or this year are compared to a time when last year, you know, we're in a hard lockdown and these businesses were really sort of coming into their own with regards to user engagement, the quality of the product, the technology they use, etc. So it was always going to be a very interesting, you know, quarter for me and one that I think did particularly well, but, you know, hasn't really been rewarded by the market. Is a company called Pinterest. You know, now Pinterest is one that I think a lot of people actually know and perhaps have used. So I thought, while we're chatting, that would be a nice one to actually have a bit of a look at.
Yeah, I mean, Pinterest is, and I noticed it, you know, we know the big social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Instagram obviously a Facebook property and the like, but I saw it coming through in Snap, in Twitter, where the sort of second tiers, and Pinterest is one of those social medias with hundreds of millions of users and engaged users, and they're kind of starting to crack that monetization as well.
Yes, I think, you know, that's the key thing to look at. When you look at a social media sort of platform, you know, there's two big things you have to do as a business. The first is obviously attract users and then, you know, retain those users. And the second thing is once you're able to scale, you then need to find a way to monetize that user base. But it's a case of, you know, once you've scaled and built that user base, that's the time when you can only actually monetize them, because you know that your customers or the advertisers on your platform want to see that you have a real platform, that it's been around, that it's attracting many users, and that the users are continually engaged. So you know, at 450 odd million users where Pinterest is sitting at now, they're at that place, you know, where they're finally starting to look to monetize that user base. And, you know, if one compares it to, you know, some of the other peers you mentioned, like a Twitter or a Snap, or even the big gorilla in the industry, Facebook, you know, I think, you know, Pinterest has come a long way and there's still quite a lot of potential out there in my mind. For some serious return going forward.
And what Pinterest doesn't have, which certainly Twitter has, Facebook has, is the sort of the negativity that surrounds it as a social media. My sense of Pinterest, and I'm not a user of it, is that it's a much more sort of wholesome, friendly social network, and it's less likely to get cracked down on by the Department of Justice for antitrust, and less likely to be full of trolls and have a sort of toxicity problem.
Yes, exactly right. I think, you know, one of the benefits of being someone that advertises on the Pinterest platform is that, you know, people that go to Pinterest are actually going there for a specific reason. You know, they're looking at something which is personal to them and is something that they engage in, whether it be things like home decor or gardening or recipes or those kind of ideas. So, you know, so what you're able to do is, you know, you automatically have a pretty captive user, in that this user's gone specifically to Pinterest and is looking for a pin on, for argument's sake, home decor. And, you know, they're busy searching. And as an advertiser, you know that if you're someone in that space and you're advertising furniture or whatever the case is, you know, those people are there looking specifically at what it is companies like you have to offer. And again, yes, there's no political issue there. There's no sort of abuse and anything like that on the platform, which I think, you know, a lot of people perceive it to be a safe place, you know, particularly if you're a brand and you're looking to advertise there.
I got to say, Pinterest, stock that I hadn't thought of, but I'll go do some more digging. Certainly a social network I know, but as I said, not one I use. Craig and Tony, CIO, Enbro Capital, appreciate the early morning insights.
That's it for today. I polled today on our LinkedIn and Twitter social medias. We're not on Pinterest. We were chatting with Wayne McCurry there about Maureen Roberts. Is the market missing a trick here? Stock is stuck around 10 Rand. You can go have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter. Yesterday, after chatting with Gary Boyson, we asked you, MTN or Vodacom? Well, just over half of you said MTN. A fifth of you said Vodacom. Another fifth of you said neither, with then the few remaining saying a bit of both. But certainly MTN well in advance in terms of Vodacom or MTN. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.